Story of O. Due to the volatile nature and information contained in her story, I am withholding the victim's identity. The evidence is still being uncovered. Others are coming forward with corroborating information. While details of her testimony are still being checked, we do know that what she describes in her story is entirely possible, though quite unbelievable. From the perspective of students of mind control, this story has great value, as is here presented. It might be true, and it might not be. We'll call her O, she writes. I recall as a toddler being able to run. I could barely walk to my mother for help as my instincts demanded. That's how she described the details that drove her into a condition called dissociative identity disorder, or multiple personality disorder. Instead of helping her child, the mother of O abused her. Multiple personality disorder, she explains, is the mind's sane defense to an insane situation, a way of dealing with trauma that is literally too horrible to comprehend. By compartmentalizing the memory of such horrendous abuse as incestuous rape, which violates primitive instincts and surpasses pain tolerance, the rest of the mind can function normally, as though nothing has happened. This compartmentalization is created by the brain actually shutting down neuron pathways to a specific part of the brain. These neuron pathways are triggered open again when the abuse recurs, whereby the same part of the brain that is already conditioned to the trauma deals with it again and again as needed. The results of this childhood abuse left little O unable to recall her father's sexual assaults, until she saw or felt his penis thrust at her in another attack. She remained innocent and open, amnesic of the previous abuses. As quickly as I felt the terror from conditioned response to a sexual assault, she writes, my neuron pathways opened up instantaneously to the part of my brain that had previously endured the trauma. This part of my mind developed into a personality of its own which belonged to my father, which he rented out and later sold to the U.S. government. Her father, through his own investigations, was apparently a multi-generational incest victim himself from a large, poor, and horribly dysfunctional family where his mother earned a living as a prostitute to local lumbermen. My father's brothers and sisters were all sexually and occult ritually abused, just as he was, and they grew up to be drug addicts, prostitutes, street derelicts, and pedophiles who also sexually abused me and my brothers and sisters. By occult ritually abused, O means abuse such as has been reported by people taking part in black rites, sex magic, satanic rituals. O's case duplicates the mind control effects described by David, Luis Castillo, Candy Jones, but it goes further because O says she regained her memory and reintegrated her multiple personalities, remembering the process that made her a courier like David and Candy, one who would carry secret messages locked behind post-hypnotic blocks, and she molded drugs, cocaine, for the CIA and performed perverted sex acts for a number of leading politicians, including two presidents of the United States while they were in office, and one before he came to office. Her father prostituted her to several of his friends, local mobsters, relatives, Satanists, police officers, strangers, and such before he entered her into service of the cryptocracy. O and her siblings were used in child porn films by their father and their uncles. As a child, she was forced to perform sex acts. It was her uncle, she said, who performed her father of the U.S. government's Defense Intelligence Agency's mind control operation that was recruiting multi-generational incest-abused children with multiple personality disorder for its mind control studies. I was a prime candidate, a chosen one, and my father seized the opportunity as it would provide him immunity from prosecution for the child porn charge he was facing. He was hurriedly flown to Boston for a two-week course on how to raise your child for an offshoot of MKUltra called Project Monarch. When he returned from Boston, she says, he was smiling and pleased with his knowledge of what he termed reverse psychology. This she describes as puns and phrases that stuck in my mind like, you earn your keep and I'll keep you what you earn. Her description of her father's newly acquired linguistic techniques included what David calls audio reversals. It is coming into acceptance among the psychiatric community that people suffering from multiple personality disorder often exhibit unusual abilities in their different personalities. While the control personality, or day-to-day normal personality, sometimes called the executive personality, might be seriously nearsighted, another personality might have 20/20 vision. Common is the hyperamnesia David described, and the high tolerance to pain we describe in Candy Jones' story. O had her own version of these same abilities. I learned to read at the young age of 4 due to my photographic memory, which was a result of MPD. Our government researchers knew about the photographic memory aspect of MPD, as well as the increased visual acuity, which is 44 times greater than that of the average person. They knew about the unusually high pain tolerance and the compartmentalization of memory, all of which were appealing for military and covert operations development. Additionally, my sexuality was primitively twisted since infancy, which was appealing to perverse politicians who could hide their actions deep within my memory compartments, referred to as personalities. I had personalities for pornography, personality for bestiality, personality for incest, personality for withstanding the horrendous psychological abuse of my mother, personality that witnessed my occult father ritually murdering a man, personality for prostitution, while the rest of me functioned somewhat normally at school. My normal personality provided a cover for the abuse I was enduring, but best of all, it had hope that there was somewhere in the world where people did not hurt each other. O's young mind was scrambled with the Project Monarch mythologies, she says, which confused fantasy with reality. Disney stories, Cinderella, and The Wizard of Oz were placed at the base of her programming. These techniques are applied today as healing modalities for DID patients, a sort of mind control in reverse. When she was 13, with her breast beginning to swell, she was judged to be too old for pedophile perversions. It was then that she was sold to a U.S. senator. From that point on, she says, my MPD existence became more regimented as I was kept physically worn down to the point of exhaustion in order that I be sufficiently receptive to my father's limited hypnotic programming capabilities. My television, books, and music became even more strictly controlled and monitored than before, not only to infringe on my last minuscule freedom of choice, but for total mind control conditioning purposes. For example, the annual television of Judy Garland's Wizard of Oz was celebrated as a holiday around my house to prepare my mind for future base programming on the theme that I, like Dorothy, could spin into another dimension over the rainbow. My father insisted I watch the Walt Disney movie Cinderella with him, paralleling my existence to Cinderella's magically transforming from a dirty little slave to a beautiful princess. And typical reverse psychology humor, he referred to pornographic photos when singing, "Someday my prince, will come," or by placing literal sexual emphasis on "will come." My brother, who was often featured in kiddie porn with me, was not chosen for Project Monarch, besides supplying more children to be dedicated in later years, yet my father figured what was good for me was good for my brother. He took us to see Walt Disney's Pinocchio, explaining that my brother and I were his puppets still in the carving stage. The distortions of reality that these and other Disney theme movies provided, when coupled with my father's controlling conscious and subconscious influence, began to further erode our ability to discern fantasy from reality. My brother, now 47, remains psychologically locked into those traumatic childhood years and is obsessed with Disney to this day, decorating his house in Disney memorabilia, wearing Disney clothes, listening to my father's instructions on his Disney telephone, and maintaining "When You Wish Upon a Star" as his favorite song, with no conscious idea as to why. Every other Project Monarch slave O met had been programmed along similar lines as she had. I had to watch such programs as I Dream of Jeannie, The Brady Bunch, Gumby and Pokey, and Bewitched. I could relate to the genie pleasing her master, who was a major in the Air Force, in I Dream of Jeannie. This served to confuse the reality of my own experience with a fantasy of a TV production. I told all the outsiders that my family was just like the Bradys. Though Gumby and Pokey, I was led to believe that I was flexible as these clay figures, capable of being physically maneuvered into any sexual position. In Bewitched, it is the normal next-door neighbor that is considered crazy rather than the witches, another reversal that applied to my bizarre existence. O said her father took advantage of his new political connections and advances himself in his work through his exploitation of his children. Soon he was promoted, due to who he knew within the Pentagon Procurement Office and General Services Administration, and what he had learned about Double Blind's hypnotic persuasion. In rude pedophile fashion, he surrounded himself with children by coaching Little League sports, chaperoning school and catechism activities, and becoming involved with Boy Scouts, all of which made him appear to be a pillar of the community. The illusion was forming. Abused by both government representatives and priests in the Catholic Church, O says that there are strong political ties between the Catholic Church and the U.S. government, which is evidenced by the much-publicized relationship between the President and the Pope during Reagan administration. But this political relationship was evident to me years before through experiencing direct involvement in Project Monarch's physical and psychological conditioning and abuse. Satanic rituals, O said, were often used to traumatize her in attempts to further fragment her personality. But that, she says, did not promote the helpless attitude that was desired. What they believed, she said, was to make people believe that there were spiritual warfare going on which is mankind's ability to stop. I knew it was my father, not Satan, that murdered that unsuspecting hunter in the woods during the ritual, and I know no spirits or demons were being appeased by my uncle Bob's slaughter of numerous pets, even when bunnies screamed like a woman while being tortured to death. Regardless of my spiritual beliefs, I experienced the results just the same, being subjected to and witnessing trauma so horrible it literally drove me out of my mind, while my body was raped, tortured, and ravaged by men. Whether I was in the military, NASA, or government building, the procedure for maintaining me under total mind control remained consistent with Project Monarch requirements. This included physical and/or psychological trauma, sleep, feed, and water deprivation, high voltage electric shock, and hypnotic and/or harmonic programming of specific memory compartments' personalities. The high-tech equipment and methods I endured from the time on gave our government absolute control of my mind and life, since I had been literally driven out of my conscious mind, and I existed only through my programmed subconscious. I lost my free will, ability to reason, and I could not think to question anything that was happening to me. I could only do as I was told. In the summer of 1975, O's family drove her from Michigan to Teton Mountains of Wyoming. There she was introduced to Dick Cheney, Wyoming's congressman who would become the White House Chief of Staff to President Ford and eventually Secretary of Defense George Bush. O says Cheney enjoyed a sadistic ritual called a most dangerous game. Originally devised to train the military in survival and combat maneuvers, it was used on O as a means of further conditioning her mind to believe that there was no place to hide, as well as to more deeply traumatize her for ensuring programming. It was my experience over the years that a most dangerous game has numerous variations of the primary theme of being stripped naked and turned loose in the wilderness while being hunted by men. In reality, the wilderness area was enclosed in military fencing, and it was only a matter of time until I was caught, repeatedly raped, and tortured. Dick Cheney has an apparent addiction to the thrill of the sort, and appears obsessed with playing a most dangerous game as a means of traumatizing mind control victims, as well as for his own sexual kink. My introduction to the game occurred upon arrival, and it physically and psychologically devastated me. O says she was so traumatized by the event that after she stood trembling, naked in this dark hunting lodge office after being hunted down and caught, Cheney was talking as he paced, she says. I could stuff you and mount you like a jackalope and call you a two-legged deer, or I could stuff you with his unzipped pants to reveal his oversized penis right down your throat and then mount you. Which do you prefer? While O stood silently trembling, not knowing what to say, blood and sweat and dirt slid down her legs and shoulders. Make up your mind, you don't get a choice anyway. I make up your mind for you. That's why you're here. For me to make you a mind and make you mind. You've lost your mind a long time ago. Now I'm going to give you one. Just like the Wizard of Oz gave Scarecrow a brain, the Yellow Brick Road led you here to me. You've come such a long way for your brain, and I will give you one. O says Chaney said that. When O asked to use the bathroom, Chaney's face turned red with rage, and he was on her in an instant, slamming her back into the wall, growling. If you don't mind me, I will kill you. I could kill you with my bare hands. You're not first and you won't be the last. I'll kill you anytime I goddamn well please. He flung me on the coat that was behind me and finished taking his rage out on my sexuality. O says that during the assault, Chaney used an electric cattle prod on her. The following year, O says, she was dropped off to the Kennedy Space Center in Titusville, Florida, where she was subjected to her first NASA programming. From then on, I was obsessed with following the Yellow Brick Road to Nashville, Tennessee, where I got involved with people in the country music business who were working undercover for the government. In the early 1980s, my base programming was instilled by U.S. Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, who holds a top secret clearance in the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychological Warfare Division. Aquino is a professor and neo-Nazi. He's the founder of the Himmler-inspired occult Temple of Set, and has been charged with child ritual and sexual abuse at the Presidio Daycare in San Francisco, California. But, like my father, Aquino remains above the law while he continues to traumatize and program CIA-destined young minds in a quest to create the superior race of Project Monarch mind-controlled slaves. I quickly learned that Aquino did not adhere to his profoundly professed occult superstition more than I did, and his satanic power was in the form of numerous variations of high-voltage stun guns which he used on me regularly. Although Aquino used occult blood trauma as a trauma base, his programming was high-tech and clean, not muddled in a proverbial witch brew of ignorance. He quickly dispelled the influence of our previous programmers and began programming me according to the senator's specifications, as his own little witch for satanic, sadistic sex and covert CIA drug muling, blackmail, and prostitution operations. Aquino provided the ancient instructions on how to mutilate me. Silver nitrate and hot exacto knives were used to carve the details of the witch on her vagina without any form of amnesia. The muscles were cut so that when her body flexed, they would protrude from her body, showing the hidden face. This was done not only as a curiosity, but because, according to O, it made her vagina suited to the senator's tiny, underdeveloped penis, and made her the senator's own little witch for which this witch was programming. In 1981, the senator joined Aquino at Huntsville, Alabama, during one of the programming sessions, O says. NASA cooperates with senators since it is his appropriations committee that determines how much and whether or not NASA receives any government funding. I laid naked on the cold metal table, tranced and photographically recording every word and detail of my programming and every word that the senator and Aquino exchanged. The senator was providing Aquino with specific details of certain perversions he wanted me to equip to fulfill or perform. Additionally, they talked about scrambling my immediate memory with two private porn films they were arranging to have produced locally, how to divide a personality, and how to create a sex slave. These films are the kind of NASA became involved in producing for the dual purpose of scrambling memory, as well as documenting their mind control procedures. The resident pornographers were two local police, one of which was a sergeant, and this serves NSA and NASA and CIA when cover is necessary. I photographed and identified the sergeant and his jailer officer in 1990, and my life was threatened as a result. The How to Create a Sex Slave film depicts the common spin programming, which in essence is the combination to unlocking or accessing a specific programmed act. For example, the compartment of the brain that holds memory of incest is stimulated to open when the abuse occurs again. Seeing my father's penis would trigger specific responses, supposedly opening the neural pathways of my brain to allow part of my brain that dealt with him before to deal with him again. With the spin programming, the trigger of seeing my father's penis is replaced with a combination of specific verbal commands and specific number of revolutions in turning my body so that anyone with the combination can access that particular part of the brain. The part my mind originally abused by my father learned to like sex, painful sex. The senator wanted me to program in such a way that he could decide if he wanted me to scream and cry when he whipped me, or if he wanted me to become sexually aroused and beg for more. After programming, when I went to the senator, I would dance like a music box dancer, twirling round and round until the senator's fiddle music stopped. My brain knew how many revolutions I had made, whether I was capable of conscious counting or not. I then desired results were produced, and their appropriate state accessed. This is but one simplified example of sex programming, and I was programmed for more than sex. But this particular incident of programming at the U.S. Army Redstone Arsenal would change my existence entirely and set the stage for my role in covert government operations as a presidential model. The majority of my programming was Oz theme based, which meant the combination of codes, keys, and triggers to access me were related to L. Frank Baum's Wizard of Oz. CIA cryptic language is a manipulation of the English language in such a way that words have double meaning, which the way people's familiar with each other have inside jokes. Since a mind-controlled slave exists through their very literal subconscious, which has no way of discerning fantasy from reality, or intended meaning from literal cryptic language or specifically effective, many CIA covert operations I was involved in occurred in public, and anyone who might have overheard our conversation would have heard something very different than what actually transpired. For example, my escort linked arms with me like Dorothy's companions did with her when walking the yellow brick road in The Wizard of Oz, which must have appeared normal or even romantic to outsiders, but signaled me that I'd better follow in directions. He read the sign on the door, service entrance, accentuating syllables ever so lightly so that I heard him command, "Service in trance." After Aquino instilled my base sex programming, I was often taken to Youngstown, Ohio to attend the sex slave training camp referred to as Charm School. Whenever Charm School was in session, there were several girls being tortured and trained at once. I've seen and known numerous girls who went through Charm School, but understandably very few were reported to have survived or recovered their minds enough to talk about it. This so-called Charm School, O said, was owned and operated by a member of a prominent banking family who took the name of the role of governor from the movie My Fair Lady in an attempt to confuse reality with movie fantasy. In the movie Governor, in the Cockney title given Professional Doolittle, who transformed a female street urchin into a high society lady. Additionally, the title Governor was intended to create a scramble for the real governor, who often frequented the high school as though it till were the whorehouse, says O. Charm school meant I would be charmed, mesmerized, hypnotized, and programmed to be a high-class prostitute for politicians. I did learn their way to walk. I learned when to talk, how to dress, how to sit and stand. Table manners were not taught, as they were not needed since slave endured food and water deprivation when working. Noticeable in O's behavior is her conditioned way of sitting, walking, talking, and smiling. O said that the senator justified mind control atrocities as a means of thrusting mankind into an accelerated evolution according to the neo-Nazi principles he adhered to. She said he justified manipulating mankind's religion to bring about prophesized biblical world peace through the only means available: total mind control in the New World Order. Because, after all, even the Pope and Mormon prophet know this is the only way to peace. They cooperate fully with the project. The senator justified our country's involvement in drug distribution, pornography, and white slavery, O said, as a means of gaining control of illegal activities worldwide to fund black budget covert activity that will bring about world peace through world dominance and total control. 95% of the people want to be led by the 5% was the senator's justification for mass mind control worldwide, and he claimed this could be proven because the 95% do not want to know what really goes on in government. The senator had a captive audience, literally. O absorbed and remembered information that the masterminds behind the New World Order never intended to have revealed, since the senator regarded her as an object, a game piece that could be moved through life as though he were playing chess. He thought it was safe to make her listen to his hidden political agenda. The senator would have liked to talk to a post. I fulfilled that role as his silent sounding board. To date, I apply much of what I absorbed from his recitations to my survival and ultimately exposure of who is running our government and the mind control atrocities and crimes proliferating against humanity for ushering in the New World Order. O identifies several of the hidden mind control centers in the U.S. She said one of them is Mount Shasta, California. It is used as training operations camp for a variety of paramilitary projects. Among the other things, robot soldiers are trained there. Usually this training is done with the highest technology and invisible weaponry. At Mount Shasta, she claims, Star Wars electromagnetic mind control equipment is used for programming. She reveals that there is a CIA near-death trauma center at Lampy, Missouri, and several more across the country. At these centers, a most dangerous game is played. As her disciple and discipline and programming took over what she left of her, she was forced to do strenuous exercise for 2 hours a day and was programmed to eat like a bird to keep a stunning figure. She said her public image was a program personnel that always smiled, looked, and talked like a proverbial airhead blonde, and kept outsiders away by socializing only with her in a controlled environment. One of the most frequented centers for programming was McKill Dill Air Force Base in Tampa, Florida. Presidential modeling action for O consisted in taking cruise ships from Miami through the Caribbean and Mexico mooling cocaine. While I was robotically carrying out transactions as ordered, I also prostituted it to Central and South American drug lords and politicians and oftentimes filmed pornographically. In the early 1980s, her duties included passing messages to and from the senator and baby doc Duvaler and Puerto Rican drug lord Jose Busto. The working relationship between CIA and Haiti was abruptly concluded with baby doc being whisked away from an uprising in Haiti by our government, along with CIA drug profits. The only drug wars I ever witnessed in the U.S., Caribbean, and Mexico were those launched by the CIA against its competition. The drug business was booming for the CIA. I brought suitcases of cocaine into the port of Miami. According to O, her mind-controlled existence became more complicated after the senator introduced her to President Reagan in 1983 at a White House party. He told her, she says, "When you meet the chief, imagine him with his pants down. He's most comfortable knowing you are imagining him with his pants down. He doesn't want formality." Apparently Reagan had seen the videos made in Huntsville, how to divide a personality and how to create a sex slave. He was very pleased with me as though I had participated in them willingly. Within the first few minutes of meeting Reagan, he was giving me acting tips to utilize in pornography. "When you become your part," Reagan said, "your performance increases, which in turn increases your ability to do your part for your country. Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, your part." Here, she points out Reagan was using one of her trigger phrases. Reagan explained to me that the illegal CIA covert activities I was forced to participate in were justified as they funded covert activities in Afghanistan and Nicaragua. Reagan told me, America's freedom train is spanning the globe, and sex is but a sidetrack to the ultimate course of freedom. Our job of procuring and transporting arms is the most difficult part of all, but it can and must be done. How can a man with no arms fight? Covert activity is necessary as an American people raise too much hell about violence, and it's better that they're not informed of our supporting wars they cannot understand. O said that Reagan twisted reality to fit his personal perceptions rather than adhere to the senator's philosophies of providing rationalizations. President Reagan did not perceive mind control as slavery. He thought of it as an opportunity for those who would like to otherwise have been nothing in life. Multi-generational incest abuse children, like myself, are previously impoverished baseball players from third world countries, and slums are provided an opportunity to be all they can be through making a contribution to society, our nation, and the world by utilizing their talents to maximize potential and becoming programmed machines. With this attitude, Reagan was proud of the role he played as the Wizard of Oz to Project Monarch slaves like me. The night she met Reagan, she said, the senator acted in the capacity of a pimp and prostitutor to the president. He informed me that Uncle Ronnie doesn't sleep with his mommy, preferring the L.L. Bean flannel sheets, nightshirt, and nightcap because they're warmer, safer, more comfortable, and don't snore. Reagan accessed my sexual programming, and I became my part as a prostitute to Uncle Ronnie. O says he did not move during sex. Moving was my job, and my job was to please him, whatever it took, and it took more time than anything. Many porn films were manufactured solely for the president's pleasure. O said that sometimes, according to his specific instructions, the films were made. O said Reagan never hurt her, but made sure someone else did, so that he could use his kindness as a bond to the little child personality he accessed for sex. The biggest kink Reagan had, O reported, was bestiality pornography. He wholeheartedly reproved porn as a way to fund covert activities. After meeting President Reagan, O said she endured additional base programming by Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino. She said this was done largely for security reasons in order to override the senator's control. Since Reagan was shot, he took extra precautions to ensure his safety, which included directing Aquino as how he wanted me programmed. Much to Aquino's dismay and embarrassment, Reagan loved the occult role that this Army Lieutenant Colonel played for mind control traumatization purposes as it fit in with public promotion of religion Reagan had launched. The masterminds behind the New World Order wanted to project the illusion that their mind control operatives were demon-possessed and that the atrocities people were witnessing were biblical in proportion in order that they would feel helpless to oppose them. Without Christianity, Satanism loses its effectiveness. But together, Reagan, like the senator, the Pope, Aquino, and so many others, believed world peace be acquired by controlling the minds of the masses through their religion. Aquino's role delighted Reagan, and he demanded that Aquino wear his black robes to a White House party to influence superstitions of the few South American diplomats. Aquino appeared foolish in the eyes of his peers, who knew Aquino's image was only a guise for psychological warfare, as it made Aquino like he believed his own facade. Aquino paid Reagan back. Minutes before I was prostituted to Reagan that evening, Aquino ordered me into a closed side room of the White House and very quickly had intercourse with me, slapped me on the behind, and disrespectfully said, "Take that to the chief." Later, Reagan instructed Aquino to use O for various military and government installations to provide hands-on mind control demonstrations of the latest advancements in training. According to O, Reagan said that the hands-on demonstrations would educate our boys in the military to the wonders of mind control phenomena. And, said O, hands-on meant sex, After all, entertaining the troops is a long American tradition. O goes on to describe her programming and use as a pigeon, one who carries secret messages locked behind post-hypnotic suggestions, which must be triggered to be released. O's pigeon act was much more sophisticated than Candy Jones. She was escorted aboard Noriega's yacht by Michael Aquino. I was helped onto the back of the yacht by paramilitary guards who kept me there at gunpoint until I was cleared. After she was escorted to Noriega, he pressed a baby's ear into her hand, which triggered the release of the message, which was, as she remembers it, "If you please, sir, I have a message from the President of the United States of America. The successes we have enjoyed in our shared endeavors are now history in the making, which, sick course, cannot be altered, regardless of the imminent lifting of the veil by well-intentioned do-gooders. As this veil is lifted, it may shed light on you. So you must have your house in order, as does Ollie North, and cease any and all detectable activity. I will do my best to keep you under shield and out of view if you comply with these orders and cease all detectivities at once." O said Noriega acted insulted by this message, and a moment of ensuing chaos reigned during which Aquino hypnotically waved his hands in front of Noriega and dramatically spread out his satanic black cape, which appeared to fill the room. Noriega was apparently a superstitious believer in something like Santeria, a Christian sect which mixes magic with practices which born from voodoo. Aquino's manner was sideshow style rather than the usual somber tones used on military bases for the hands-on demonstrations. "General, for your entertainment and respect and appreciation of your successful enterprising contributition, the chief has sent his presidential model to demonstrate the latest technology in mind control advancements. With the flip of a switch, this pigeon becomes a kitten," I began undressing. Quite a different animal. O said that because of Noriega's superstition, the personality switch frightened him. Noriega believed wholeheartedly in mind control, but could not grasp the concept of multiple personalities, which he perceived as demonic possession, and therefore did not adhere to the idea of one slave being trained for business and pleasure. Aquino was manipulating these beliefs of Noriega masterfully, compounded by the notion of Aquino being a devil working for Reagan. The impact of this demonstration would prove to be psychological warfare of the highest order, administered to force Noriega to become more discreet. Aquino then ordered her to lie on the bed, and he invited Noriega to look closer to what the wizard, his chief, Reagan, could create. Noriega stepped closer to see what Aquino was pointing out to him. Between my breasts, a large carved Baphomet appeared. Aquino had hypnotically regressed me to the time of its making, which caused it to seemingly suddenly appear right before Noriega's eyes. O describes Noriega's jumping back, terrified. I believe Noriega stayed in the room for the rest of the demonstration simply because he was frozen in fear. Aquino hit me with a cat-o'-nine tails, and I shrieked in pain. Noriega jumped. Aquino hit me with it again, this time activating me to respond sexually as though pain were pleasure, a mind control concept that Noriega more readily grasped. Then Aquino pointed out that the Baphomet had disappeared as he cut me with a knife between my breasts using the senator's hypnotic induction. "In like a knife, sharp and clean, I'll carve out what I want." My trance had been deepened to the extent that my circulatory system was slowed, and it did not bleed until Aquino hypnotically changed my trance level. Aquino told Noriega that the Baphomet carving had retreated to the depths of my soul, possessing me and evoking the heat of hell, as he commanded me to show my vaginal mutilation carving of the Baphomet face. As I did, Aquino offered Noriega my sex, which Noriega refused as predicted, with his eyes bulging in terror and revulsion. Aquino told him rejection of me had killed me, and I ceased breathing and moving in its condition. Noriega was dumbfounded as Aquino laughed wickedly and threatened. Even death would not permit her escape from the wizard's, Reagan's, power. He explained that I was the wizard's own under his spell, and we re-energize myself and come back to life. He handed me the vaginal prod to masturbate myself, pushing the button to electrically jolt myself internally upon command. Noriega's eyes were enormous. He paled to a sickly gray, his mouth fell open, and he ran out the door as Aquino assured him that he had nowhere to run, nowhere to hide from Reagan's powers. According to O, Noriega interpreted the demonstration as a threat from the depths of hell, which should have been enough to make him heed Reagan's commands to break the drug trafficking ties immediately. After I'd made excerpts from her book, I sent a draft for corrections. She added a few points for her letters to me that I think are worth sharing about the process of deprogramming she experienced. Within the first 30 days of deprogramming, I learned the process of retrieving my memory. By learning to trance by myself, I was free of outside influence and so was able to unlock various memory compartments with my knowledge of my codes, keys, triggers, formulas, and accurately retrieve my blocked memories. I had to logically learn to decipher scrambles from reality. By common definition, MPD is the mind's sane defense to trauma, too horrible to comprehend. Deprogrammer's influence was to help me deal with the reality in order that incomprehensible become comprehensible. Otherwise, I would have kept fragmenting. My deprogrammer accomplished this by teaching me the revivification memory recovery method rather than the commonly used regression techniques that require a person to abstract, that is to relive and re-experience moments of trauma. In NLP, this is called triple disassociation. Rather than reliving the events, I watch them on my mind screen, deep in my trance as needed for reality checks. I untangled scrambles by using common sense, smelling the smells, seeing the sights, tasting the sweat, and so forth, without having to relive the pain. I am now reintegrated, and most everyone who is qualified to judge it clinically speaking and who possess common sense knows it. My choice of terminology has learned since childhood. You must remember that I had a photographic memory and I recorded all conversations going on around me all the time. Like surgeons who don't give the thought to the fact that their anesthesia patient can subconsciously hear them as they perform surgery. Aquino didn't give thought to my underhearing him talking about his understudies during my programming sessions and or hands-on demonstrations. My deprogrammer went to extreme lengths to make sure that I had reintegrated and deprogrammed into me, not him. I had to follow some long, hard roads to learn certain things seemingly unnecessarily, just because he was concerned with my individuality. He could have provided me with the shortcuts by sharing what he knows, including certain language, but no, he put me through the paces of learning all on my own, stumbling all the way. O is still making progress, writing another book, I hear. Meanwhile, Michael Aquino showed his hand in 1981 when he corroborated with Colonel Paul E. Vallee to write a paper titled From PSYOP to Mind War, The Psychology of Victory. The paper was submitted to Military Review and Parameter, the publication of the U.S. Army War College. Psychotronic research is in its infancy, but the U.S. Army already possesses an operational weapons system designed to do what LTC, John X. Allender, would like ESP to do, except that this weapon system uses existing communications media. It seeks to map the minds of neutral and enemy individuals and then to change them in accordance with U.S. national interests. It does this on a wide scale, embracing military units, regions, nations, and blocks. In its preferred form, it's called psychological operations. Does PSYOP work, or is it merely a cosmetic which fields commanders rather not be bothered? Let us begin with a simple name change. We shall rid ourselves of the self-conscious, almost embarrassed concept of psychological operations. In its place, we shall create mind war. The term is harsh and fear-inspiring, and so it should be. In its term of attack and victory, not one of the rationalizations are coaxing and conciliation. The enemy may be offended by it. It is all quite all right as long as he is defeated. The definition is offered. Mind war is the deliberate, aggressive, and convincing of all participants in a war that we will win that war. It is deliberate in that it is planned, systematic, and comprehensive effort involving all levels of activity from the strategic to the logical and tactical. It is aggressive because opinions and attitudes must be actively changed from those antagonistic to us to those supportive of us, of what we're to achieve victory. We will not win if we content ourselves with countering opinions and attitudes instilled by enemy governments. We must reach the people before they resolve to support their armies, and we must reach those armies before our combat troops ever send them to the battlefields. Compare this definition with that of psychological warfare as first offered by General William Donovan of the OSS in his World War II era Basic Estimate of Psychological Warfare. Psychological warfare is the coordination, use of all means, including moral and physical, by which the end is attained, other than those of recognized military operations, but including the psychological exploitation of the result of those recognized military actions, which tend to destroy the will of the enemy to achieve victory and to damage his political or economic capacity to do so, which tend to deprive the enemy of the support, assistance, or sympathy of his allies or associates, or of neutrals, or to prevent the acquisition of such support, assistance, or sympathy, or which end to create, maintain, or to increase the support, assistance, and sympathy of neutrals. If the euphemism psychological operations resulted from, as one general officer put it in 1947, a letter, a great need for a synonym which could be used in peacetime that would not shock the sensibilities of citizens of democracy, then it may have succeeded domestically. On the other hand, it does not seem to have reassured the sensibilities of the Soviets, who in 1980 described U.S. Army PSYOP as including unpardonable methods of ideological sabotage, including not just flagrant lies, slander, and disinformation, but also political blackmail, provocation, and terror. For the mind to believe in it, its own decisions, it must feel that it made those decisions without coercion. Coercive measures used by the mind or operative, consequently, must not be detectable by an ordinary means. There is no need to resort to mind-weakening drugs such as those explored by the CIA. In fact, the exposure of a single such method would do unacceptable damage to mind war's reputation for truth. Existing PSYOP identifications, purely sociological factors which suggest appropriate idioms for messages. Doctrine in this area is highly developed, and the task is basically one of assembling and maintaining individuals and teams with enough expertise and experience to apply the doctrine effectively. With Aquino's and Vallée's article are layers and layers of meaning. It's obvious that the authors are familiar with the techniques of hypnosis and NLP. They argue that a clear future should be suggested, which is a powerful tool of communicating with the unconscious future pacing. They also suggest that mind war could be waged covertly and invisibly, which any NLP practitioner knows more effect than addressing the problem up front to the conscious mind. In the 9-1-1 post-world, the nation is asking the question, have we been targeted with a pseudo-event that has made us slaves in fear? There was the method. There was the motive. Did they take the opportunity like FDR and orchestrate a pseudo-event that was guaranteed to arouse the sleepwalking American public? There are many levers to the use of mind control in America.